The Rams are back where they belong, where it all began in 1946. The last 20 years have been a bad dream. Now, it's time for the Ramble On Podcast. Here are your hosts, Steve Mason and Ryan Abraham.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Ramble On Podcast. I'm Steve Mason from ESPN LA, Mason and Ireland Show, every day, 3, along with Ryan Abraham, who is with USCFootball.com and now with LARamsReport.com. And we are getting ready for a return of the Los Angeles Rams. They're back, in fact, and we're starting to look ahead to next season and some of the offseason building. And joining us right now is the brand new Rams beat writer for the LA Times. Formerly, his beat was the USC football Trojans and USC. Gary Klein is here. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Good to be with you and Ryan.
So how, first of all, talk about the transition for you. You've been a USC beat writer for a long time, and the Rams come to town. How did you find yourself on that assignment?
Well, you know, Steve, we at the Times have gone through some big changes at the end of the year in terms of some of our staff members that took buyouts and whatnot, and I think there was going to be a probably a reshuffling of the staff anyway, just because of manpower and whatnot. And with the Rams coming back to Los Angeles, it seemed like a good time, I thought, for me to take on a new challenge after working the USC beat for about 14 years. All the ups and downs and drama that that we all watched happen in that program, I hope, prepared me for what it will be, you know, the next challenge in my career.
Gary, I remember, you know, talking to you when I first, you know, back in, I guess it was probably 14 years ago, on the USC beat, got that down at USC practice. And I remember you told me, yeah, at the Times, usually you stick around a beat for a year or two and then they move you somewhere else. And like you said, that was 14 years ago. So it took a while to get that to happen.
Well, we all know that, you know, the newspaper side of the media business has changed dramatically, of course, in that time. And just the way that, in that era, the beats were turned over every few years. But I think given with what was happening in the business and also the fact that USC, that story was just so dynamic that the longer I stayed on it, you know, the more expertise I was able to get and hopefully relay that to readers. So here, but I'm ready for another chapter. And so I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the stories of the last couple of days. One of them is that the Rams have finalized their plan to build a temporary training facility now in Thousand Oaks. It'll be at Cal Lutheran University. You know, originally when I heard that they were looking for a training facility, I thought, well, you would think they would be on this side of the hill and not so deep into the valley. Why do you think they looked that far away? Or that far away from, you know, for example, the Coliseum in the LA metropolitan area to find a training facility?
Steve, I think they probably looked at a lot of areas in terms of the, you know, the greater Los Angeles area, Orange County, out in that Thousand Oaks area. I think they ultimately settled on that because, number one, Cal Lutheran does have some experience having a team there. The Dallas Cowboys were there for years, and apparently, you know, all indications are that they will continue to look out there for a permanent facility as well. So, why the exact dynamics of why that decision was made to settle there, I think, might become clearer as we go forward and we find out where the permanent facility is. But from a temporary standpoint, there are some things in place at Cal Lutheran. There's room for them to put in their temporary facility. And, you know, they've already leased some space in Agoura Hills from a business side. So it's going to be interesting because, as you mentioned, you know, they're going to be in Oxnard for off-season workouts. They're going to probably be down at UC Irvine for training camp and then in Thousand Oaks for their temporary practice site. So if you talk to Kevin Demoff, the chief operating officer, he sells that as a good thing, as a way to kind of touch all of the Rams fans in Southern California. But as you mentioned, I think one of the pieces that's kind of missing is that greater Los Angeles area closer to the Coliseum and the Inglewood site.
Gary, the being a South Bay guy, I was kind of hoping that the Inglewood site, you know, in 2019 or whatever it opens, would actually have, you know, the training facilities and all that kind of stuff there. Do you know if there was any talk of that, or if it was really just focused on? It sounds like right now it's game day only, and everything else is going to be somewhere else.
That's the impression I get, Ryan. I think, though, that on some levels, that's probably still a work in progress. I think it's the Houston Texans that, if I'm not mistaken, have a training facility near their stadium, and I might be wrong about that. But that seems like it would be, you know, kind of a natural fit. Although, if the overarching plan is to make that kind of a retail and media type campus, then you know perhaps that doesn't fit. But again, I don't think anything really is finalized in terms of that plan. I think it might be some fluidity as we move towards 2019. So we'll see. You know, but definitely, I think that Thousand Oaks region is one that they're going to continue to look at possibly as a permanent site.
Gary, the Rams have announced their season ticket prices and the tiering for this ticket prices. I put in my 155,000 and 999 friends of mine. And now they've released sort of the structure. And the thing I like about it is, you can actually get a season ticket package for as low as $360. There are 8 tiers for the 9-game packages. And to me, that's really it's become very affordable, I think, for the average LA fan. Talk about sort of, you know, in dealing with Demoff, sort of that structure and the way it's laid out and it has become so accessible.
Well, they had talked about, you know, Steve, when they first got here, about having ticket pricing that was comparable to what they had in St. Louis last season. And I think if you do the division, there is a slight upgrade just because, for one reason, they're going to play one fewer game. They're going to be in London for one of those quote-unquote home games. But I think you're right. I mean, for the return of the NFL, at least, especially at that lower end, that – by professional sports standards, seems like a pretty reasonably priced ticket. I just think it's going to be very interesting to watch as we move towards, 2019. And of course, there's no personal seat licenses attached to these yet. I think some LA fans are going to, you know, have some sticker shock when that move happens. But for the first season, especially, it seems to me like it's within the realm of possibility for the average fan to actually get into that stadium and see pro football for the first time in more than 2 decades.
Yeah, and
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's kind of amazing. I mean, for this coming season, and you know, I assume for the next couple before they get to the new facility, that's the low end season ticket pricing would come to $40 per game. It seems incredibly affordable and you're right. There's going to be incredible expense that goes into seat licenses, but for the next couple of years, $40 a game. You know, a lot of average fans are going to be able to afford that.
I think it's a pretty smart move on their part in terms of not pricing, pricing themselves out of the market in this first season. And now let's remember, those are the tickets. The ticket prices they released were for the 2016 season. So we don't know for sure, I don't think, what's going to happen in 17 and 18. But as a reintroduction to the Los Angeles market, I think that seems to be well within the realm of a pro sports ticket. So. I can tell you, I haven't been getting emails from fans screaming that they're overpriced. So my sense is that, for the most part, people are going to accept that.
Hey, Gary, so we've been obviously covering college for quite a while now, and there's a lot of new rules and nuances of what you can do in the NFL. And I know you had a piece today where talking about the offseason workout program that's going to start on April 18th. There's the OTAs, or you gave some specific dates for that. Maybe kind of explain what the workouts or whatever the meetings that the team is going to have, the players are going to have here in Southern California, what their different ones are called and kind of when they're going to be.
Well, I'll tell you, Ryan, I'm still learning myself. You know, I'm still in that transition where, you know, the free agency period, the contracts, the salary cap, those are all things that that I'm educating myself about. And this is another facet of that. The NFL did release all of the teams' off-season workout schedules. The Rams, as you mentioned, start on April 18th in Oxnard. And really, I think that's for the first few weeks, that's going to be players in their rehabbing from injuries and surgeries and getting treatment, working out with weights, working out on their own. There's a few weeks where there cannot be, you know, coaches out there working with them. The next phase is they can work out. They can work with players, but you can't really work as a team doing drills. They call it quote unquote separates, which I believe you can work with position groups and different players, but there's no live contact or anything like that. And you move into the final phase, the final weeks, where there can be 11-on-11 types of situations, but again, no live contact, and you can have a mandatory mini camp for veterans. Now, Jeff Fisher, in his time with the Rams, I'm not quite sure if this predates him with the Titans and the Oilers, but he said last week he's never had a mini camp, a mandatory mini camp, because he felt like, at least the way it was structured in the old days, it was kind of ridiculous to ask professional athletes not in shape to work out twice a day and whatnot. So he kind of shies from the mandatory mini camp idea, especially if players, as they have historically for him, show up for the off-season workouts. And so I think that's what they're hoping happens. There's also a rookie mini camp that will be held the first or second weekend after the draft for new players, and then they can also be in a program for the next 6 or 7 weeks. But I just think there's going to be a lot of people coming and going up there. You know, if you follow some of the players on social media, you can see that they're all packing up and moving towards Southern California, and they seem excited to get started.
So, Gary, one of the things that when Les Snead was on with Ireland and me a few weeks back, he said that this time around he was not going to name a starting quarterback. Last year he named Nick Foles before they even went to training camp, and this year he said there was going to be an open competition, but he has since named Nick Foles the starting quarterback for next year. Named Case Keenum the starting quarterback for next year. What do you make of that decision? And is it potentially the idea would be Case Keenum to start the year and you draft a quarterback, either Carson Wentz or Jared Goff or Paxton Lynch? I mean, what do you think that poker game is like? Is Case Keenum the quarterback next year, and do they snag a quarterback in the draft?
Well, Steve, I think what Les Snead has said, and actually some of this blew up on social media last week because he was misquoted or wasn't completely quoted in something he said in a television interview. And what he said was, and which is really consistent with what they have said since they came back to L.A., is that Case Keenum is the starting quarterback going into off-season workouts. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be the starter in the first game of the season, but going in, he's the presumptive starter as they go into off-season workouts and training camp. And as you mentioned, I think they definitely are going to explore ways that they might be able to draft a quarterback, whether it's trading way up, I think, you know, to get Carson Wentz or Jared Goff or, as you mentioned, you know, Paxton Lynch is there, Connor Cook. There's some other quarterbacks in this draft that they could look at. But I don't think anyone is going to come out and proclaim necessarily that Keenum is the long-term answer for the Los Angeles Rams. I think they were happy with the way he performed when he came in last season in place of Foles. Jeff Fisher has said that Foles and Sean Mannion will both have an opportunity to compete for the starting job. But I think there's a lot of drama still to be played out, I think, in the draft and perhaps after when it comes to the Rams quarterback situation.
Gary, so 4 picks the Rams have in the first 100 in the upcoming NFL draft. Do you have a sense? I mean, it seems like it can go, you know, obviously there's a whole bunch of different directions it can go, just even with the first pick. But do you have a sense for where you feel like this team might, what direction they might go with the first couple of picks or those first 4?
Ryan, I think it really depends on how you know, how much they covet a quarterback and whether they think they can get him. Because Snead and Fisher have historically done it both ways. They've shown that they will trade up and down, you know, back and forth to get players, to give up picks, to, you know, to give up a spot to get more picks. And they've also stood pat. You know, last year, I think they surprised everyone when they took Todd Gurley, seemingly out of nowhere, but that was a player that they just kept quiet about. You know, no one really was talking about, and then they took him, and people were kind of stunned. And of course, that played out outstanding for the Rams in terms of the way Gurley came back from that knee injury. So, I, you know, their reputation is an organization, and at least Fisher and Snead as guys that will trade up and down. So I just think it goes back to if they think they can package that first pick, and then they've got the 2 second rounds and whatever, however creative they want to get, to really move up to get a quarterback that they covet, then I think they'll move. And if not, they, you know, they're not in a terrible spot at 15 where they still could fill some of their needs because they have more than just a quarterback that they need.
Yeah, I mean, probably, though, if you look at those quarterbacks, you know, the Browns are going to take one of them. They're going to take either Wentz or Goff, according to, you know, all kinds of NFL sources and mock drafts and that. And the pick that they're kind of looking at or potentially looking at is that number six pick from Baltimore. If they get up to number six, they've got a chance to take the second quarterback available. If they stay at 15, I think Paxton Lynch will probably still be on the board. Do you have a sense for the way they value these three guys as potential long-term answers?
Steve, you know, I'd be lying if I said, yes, I really know what the heck.
Oh, that's
thinking.
Why we called you. I know this stuff.
And here's the other thing, you know, that I'm learning. You know, obviously, this is the first time through really the NFL draft from the NFL side for me. And, you know, I've heard about the gamesmanship. I've heard about, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff. I've, you know, and kind of teams not really playing their hand. And I think we're seeing all of that. You know, we're going to put out, you know, Sam Farmer has done one mock draft for us. He's going to do at least one more, probably two more. And those mock drafts, as Demoff kind of commented last week, was, you know, they're great entertainment value. They really, you know, mean a lot to fans. But when it comes down to really revealing what a team is going to do, despite what people are sourcing or whatnot, I just think we don't know till draft day. We've seen too many surprises with players that are, you know, Hall of Fame bound players, guys like, you know, Aaron Rodgers that slid and all those kinds of things that you thought could never happen that have in the draft. So trying to predict it is fun, but being able to really know what they're thinking in that draft room, I think we won't know until draft day comes.
Yes. So there's no bother. So we shouldn't even bother calling Sam at this point, right?
Sam, you definitely should call. He might provide some terrific insight. But again, he's been through it, you know, for 20 years dealing with GMs and scouts and coaches in terms of what they say they're going to do and what they actually end up doing on draft day. So that's why, you know, the draft has become a cottage industry, and why we're talking about it. It's a lot of fun to speculate, but there can be a lot of surprises on that day, a lot of different dominoes falling because of one team's decision to do something or not do something that everyone expected.
Yeah, nothing more fun than watching the draft and having, you know, one of those draft experts having some guy like the top of their board, and he doesn't get picked for like hours, and you're like, yeah, he's still there, he should pick. And so it's funny that, it's just, you know, it depends what the teams want to do. Every GM's different, and everyone has different needs, and guys fall and rise. And if they see a guy that they think is ranked low and the TV people are saying he's ranked high, they love that. You know, they don't want to, they want people to be, you know, in disagreement with them. And we talk to guys
nothing
like
more fun than watching Mel Kiper be wrong on draft night.
It is.
And I say that as an ESPN employee.
Yeah. But you talk to guys like Daniel Jeremiah or the guys that cover it, and they just talk all the time about they're blatantly lied to by their sources and stuff. Or I mean, everyone's trying to protect what's theirs. They don't want to let people know who, you know, where they're leaning towards. So it's that's why you said, Gary, it's a cottage industry. It's so much fun to cover, but trying to predict what's going to happen, it's just, you know, it's an effort and futility.
Right. And even to the point, Ryan, where you'll see reports about teams bringing in players to work them out for pre-draft kind of things. You don't know if that team really has interest in that player, if that's just they're trying to fake someone else out, that they do have interest in that player, and they're only bringing them in, you know, for show. It kind of, I think, goes to so many different levels, you know, of trying to keep everyone on their toes and not let anyone else know what's going to happen. So some people would say, God, the draft, what entertainment is there in the draft? But for all of us who cover it and for all the fans that are following it, it's nonstop speculation going in.
You know, Gary, I grew up watching, I tell the story all the time, but I grew up in Ohio as a Los Angeles Rams fan. I loved the Rams when I was growing up, but maybe I think my mom was a Steelers fan. My dad was a Cowboys fan. My brother was a Raiders fan. I wanted a team that was in the playoffs every year, so I went with the Rams. And, of course, they didn't get to the Super Bowl until 79 and didn't win. They never won a Super Bowl until they got to St. Louis. When I remember those old teams of the 70s, it was always great defense and great ground game. It was kind of that Chuck Knox kind of football. And now, ironically, that's kind of what this team looks like. If you've got Case Keenum at quarterback as kind of a game manager, Todd Gurley carrying the ball maybe 250 to 300 times and grounding out a lot of yardage, next year in fantasy drafts, I think he would probably be the number one overall player taken because he's going to carry the football. And then, you know, they've got a defense anchored by Aaron Donald, who a lot of people believe may be the very best defensive player in the game. It's almost like Back to the Future. This is kind of the way the Rams used to look like back in the 70s when they were here.
Very, very, very similar in that way. You know, I think you're right. And they were always searching for a quarterback, right? So that has not changed either.
That is so funny. They went through all those guys from Dieter Brock and Joe Namath. I think he played one game for him. Burt Jones, Dan Pastorini, John Hadle, Pat, Vince Ferragamo. They just went through so many guys and never could quite settle on a quarterback. That was kind of like the running joke about the Rams was they'd go with a different quarterback every single year, and they could never quite settle on one. And then the one that actually got him to the Super Bowl was the least likely, Vince Ferragamo, who really had no pedigree at all.
Yeah. The similarities, the parallels are striking there. And just as like Dick Bass, Lawrence McCutcheon, Eric Dickerson, you know, Wendell Tyler for a time, I mean, even Charles White, right? The Rams
Big shout out for John Cappelletti.
Yeah. The Rams have had some terrific running backs. And I think, you know, Gurley, based on what he did last season and how he projects, especially if he can stay healthy, of course, gives the Rams, you know, another star at that position. The defense, you know, the fearsome foursome, the pass rush, all those great players, Jack Youngblood, I mean, the list goes on defense. And as you mentioned, Aaron Donald is an emerging star. Alec Ogletree, the linebacker, who is going to move to the middle now, is another player on the rise. So we'll see. You know, I mean, there's a lot of excitement for them coming back. But remember, now the Rams were a 7-9 team last season. They haven't had a winning season, you know, forever. And it'll be interesting because we've all been around the L.A. sports scene forever to see how long the honeymoon lasts if the Rams don't become a winner and how quickly they become a winner.
Don't be a buzzkill, Gary. It's Friday. Come on.
Come on, Gary. This you're already one of those guys who says, I don't know if it's going to work or not. Come on. This is your beat. Really want to screw up your own beat?
No. But here's the thing. The Rams will benefit, and I'd be curious what you guys think about this. I mean, the Rams are going to benefit twice here, okay? Because they're coming back. There's the excitement about the Rams coming back, the NFL coming to Los Angeles. For all those fans of other teams even that are in Los Angeles can now go see them live at the Coliseum. And regardless of how the Rams do the next 3 years, they're going to have another relaunch in 2019 when they move into that new stadium.
Yeah.
When that new stadium opens, there's going to be another round of, you know, excitement, for lack of a better term. And so I think they're going to benefit twice there. And if they can become competitive or even very, very good, then, of course, that's going to spike the interest even higher.
Gary, you talked about the benefits. I wanted, you know, you have a unique position here of having covering USC for so long and now the Rams. What do you think is there mutual benefits going on between USC and the Rams? Can they help each other? Like, how do you think that relationship's going to work? And is it just going to be a separation thing? It's not even going to, you know, interact, or will there be some place where they can both kind of help each other?
Well, Ryan, I think USC will definitely help the Rams by giving them, you know, a venue to play in once that deal is absolutely signed. You know, all the details are finally worked out. And the NFL certainly is helping USC by, you know, leasing that stadium for the next 3 years as USC attempts, you know, to get all its money together to do all of the improvements that, you know, that they have planned. So, you know, I see it as being, you know, a mutually beneficial relationship. I don't think there's going to be, you know, too many instances where they would be stepping on each other's toes. And again, I think the fact that the Rams get to come back and play in a historic venue where so many people, you know, remember them playing even before they moved to Anaheim, and for USC to have an NFL tenant, you know, showing the stadium not only on Saturdays now but on Sundays, and more than anything, you know, improving its bottom line with the funds that are going to come in from the Rams, and who knows. You know, maybe another team down the line too. I think it seems like it's going to work out as a good relationship for both.
Gary, final thing for me here. There is this idea or this sense that the team must absolutely win from the beginning, and if they don't win from the beginning, that the NFL will somehow be doomed. You know, I'll let everybody inside this a little bit. ESPN did this gigantic research study on Los Angeles. And they found that the number two most followed, sport is the Lakers and NBA. Number three, the Dodgers in Major League Baseball. And despite the fact that we haven't had a team, the number one overriding sport that people care about more than any other in Los Angeles is the NFL. I think people are underestimating the hunger that this town has for an NFL team. What do you think?
I think if you look at all of the fans that, you know, have been waiting for this to come back, there you have that population that has been starving for the Rams to return or for a team to return. And I think if you look at the last 20 years, people in Southern California are from other places, so whether it's Philadelphia, New York, you know, Florida, wherever it is, Seattle, you know, San Francisco, there's NFL teams. And while Los Angeles has been without a team and has been kind of the leveraged market for all these years in terms of other franchises threatening to move, as you mentioned, Steve, I think there's millions and millions of football fans, NFL fans, that are here. And so to have an opportunity, you know, even if you are a Philadelphia Eagles fan or a New York Giants fan, and when those teams come to town, you're going to go out to the Coliseum and, you know, cheer for your team and go crazy like the Cubs fans do when they come to Dodger Stadium. I think having a team here, having the ability to identify with a local team and kind of call it your own, is going to bring some people in. So, you know, it's been gone for a long time, and the landscape of where the NFL stands in the national sports consciousness has changed in those 20 years. And so, as you mentioned, I'm not surprised, you know, by that study or those figures.
Hey, Gary, last thing for me, and make sure everyone you follow Gary Klein on Twitter at LA Times Klein. Great follow.
Oh, come on. Everybody follows. We don't even need to say
we don't
that.
Even need to
Who
say
doesn't
that,
follow yeah. Gary Klein at this point?
I guess we should have probably talked about that earlier. But, Gary, I wanted to get the last thought for me, the international games that are coming up and the Rams' willingness to want to go play overseas and use a home game. I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that, what you thought about it.
Well, from the Rams brand perspective, it seems like a really smart idea. You know, the fact that they're gonna go to London this year as part of that series. The NFL announced they're going to China in 2018. So it seems kind of logical that they might be going to Mexico City in 2017. You know, the ability to build that kind of recognition worldwide is something obviously that's appealing to them. And I think, you know, is a good thing for them. Now, if you're the coach and the staff and the players trying to win games, some of that travel can be, you know, ridiculously hard. You know, even though we think of that as wonderful international trips in the context of a season where other teams don't have to do that and you're trying to get to the playoffs, that can be difficult. But I think from a franchise standpoint, I think they're looking forward to it. There's some, you know, there's going to be some opportunities there from a marketing standpoint that are going to be, you know, terrific for them. And they're just going to have to bite the bullet on the preparation standpoint and hope that they can win those games and kind of offset some of the advantages that teams that don't have to travel that far might have.
All right. Well, listen, Gary, we'll see you on the speed on a regular basis. Looking forward to the team coming back and looking forward to reading all about it on your beat. And, of course, we'll continue to cover it here on the Ramble On podcast. Again, Gary, what's the Twitter handle?
The Twitter handle is at LA Times Klein. And you can read all our stuff on latimes.com. But good luck to you guys with your podcast. And people also should be tuning into your show, Steve, and following Ryan, not only for his Rams coverage, but his USC coverage as well.
Absolutely. You can follow me at Steve Mason ESPN, at Steve Mason ESPN, and you can cover Ryan at Inside Troy, at Inside Troy. Don't forget LARamsReport.com, all the latest, and all of Gary's coverage as well at LATimes.com. That was a good one, right, Ry?
Yeah, it was great. Thanks. Thanks, Gary, for coming on. It was always great talking to you.
Cool. And that's the Ramble On podcast for this week.